fishers of men, you heard that. Go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God and salvation. And not only that, everybody should be able to fish. 1 Peter 3:15 says, but in your heart set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. So that's pretty simple. But here's one observation I have among all the churches that I've been to, generally speaking. So I don't know anything about the church here. But what I found basically is nobody's fishing. The churches, by and large, the members are not sharing the gospel with people. They leave that's the preacher's job. That's what we hired him for. And that's what I find in most congregations. The members are not doing it. They're leaving it up for the preacher. So what are we afraid of? Well, I think I know that there are, this is the number one question I get. Well, what's the first thing you say to somebody? Because we're looking for some kind of a mechanistic approach. We want to know, just let me say these 10 things and somebody's going to want to jump in the baptistry. But I want to say that there's a few things to consider. He tells us, in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. This is where we need to start from. We need to have Christ in our hearts as Lord. And Christ tells us in Matthew 6:21, for where your treasure is, there is where your heart will be also. And what I find, generally speaking, is the one main overarching reason that we're not sharing the gospel is because we lack passion for the gospel. We lack passion for what Christ has done for us. And I think, and we'll maybe get into this a little more if we have time, that's where our real problem is, because we already know how to talk to strangers. People are always saying, well, what should I say to somebody? What should I say? We know how to talk to strangers. We talk to strangers about all kinds of stuff. I'm sure today some of you probably had a discussion with strangers about the weather or tires on sale somewhere or homeschooling or, who knows what, health and safety. We'll talk to strangers about anything that we're passionate about. You ever have a talk with somebody about politics? A stranger? I bet you have. I bet you've had a lot recently, because we're passionate about those things. I happen to come from a state that's a real big football state. Alabama, and they win these national championships. It's almost like if they don't win the national championship, half the state's going to commit suicide. They're crazy about football, and they're passionate about that. You see it. They put bumper stickers on their cars and they wear Alabama shirts and Roll Tide everywhere because they're proud of that. They want to tell people about it. They want them to know that they're Alabama fans. They're passionate about that. Y'all don't have that here in Ohio, do you? Nothing to be passionate about here, is there? And the fans here are just as passionate about Ohio State football as they are about anything. If we're passionate about things, we'll let that be known. We'll tell people about it. We'll bring it up. We'll start the conversation. I don't need somebody to tell me how to do that. I have fun explaining this license plate you'll see on somebody's car. Let me tell you about my grandchildren. Sit next to somebody that's got grandkids, and what's going to happen? Well, the smartphone's going to come out. Let me show you these pictures of my grandkids. And oh, by the way, here's all my grandkids right here. It's me in my study talking to grandkids. But we need to use common sense. You know, we don't just grab people. And, you know, we, Colossians 4, conduct yourselves with wisdom towards outsiders, making the most of opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. So we need to use common sense when we talk to people. But we do that with anything else we talk with them about. But the point here is this, that if the fire is there, the method will take care of itself. If we have passion, we'll find a way to bring it up with somebody in the course of conversation. We don't have to do anything crazy. So where is our passion? Why don't we have more passion for the gospel? Let's consider that for a few minutes. And I think that we'd start with this, that maybe we're missing a sense of what God has done for us. Those of us that grew up in the church, think back to when you were a teenager. What was all the pressure was to get baptized, right? That was like, we have to do that. You know, that, and so sometimes I think we just miss the whole point that we'll never really appreciate God's mercy if we don't understand His justice. You know, if Howard had, you know, if I fell through the ice out here and Howard saved me, you know, every time his name came up, I'd say, you know, that Howard Coleman, he saved my life, man. Can't ever thank that guy enough. That creates a passion in us. And if we've never really understood God's justice, then how could we really appreciate His mercy and what He's done for us? And that's what creates passion. Perhaps we're just not motivated. You know, what if we said, hey, tonight, you know, starting tonight, for every person that you share the gospel with, whether they respond or not, we're going to give you $500. You know, when I'm in Africa, man, they pull out paper, they start making a list right then. I said, no, I'm not going to do this. But it creates a passion. You know, it motivates us if the gospel is, it should motivate us. And so, and we can understand that when we're motivated by other things. Maybe we just don't have a love for the lost. You know, the story of Christ and the sheep, that and the one sheep that was lost, and Christ left the other 99 and went and found the one. We're the one. We are the one. You know, we need to have a love for the lost. If we don't have a love for the lost, why would we tell anybody about the gospel? You know, we need to have a love for the lost. We need to realize that people are dead in their trespasses and sins. There was a movie a few years ago called The Sixth Sense. I don't know if any of you saw that or not, but it was a little boy, and he said, I see dead people. They're walking around like regular people. They don't know they're dead, and they need my help. That's kind of what the way I look at it. You know, I go through the airport in Atlanta all the time, the busiest airport in the world, and I just see thousands of people just rushing to get to their planes. And I just sit there going, I just sit there depressed. I see all these dead people. They're just walking around, and they don't know they're dead. Dead, and they need my help. And I wish there was some way I could share the gospel with all those people. And that's what I'm saying. Do you see dead people? Do you care? You know, do we care about that? A love for the lost. This is the one I think that I see the most often among members of the church today, is that we just don't think we know enough to teach someone. But we need to realize this. The gospel is really empowering. Paul made this statement in 1 Corinthians 2, verse 1. He said, "When I came to you, brethren, I did not come with superiority of speech or of wisdom, proclaiming to you the testimony of God. For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." And I read that passage for years, and I thought, well, that's just hyperbole. Paul's just exaggerating there, because surely he taught them a lot more than that. But the longer I live, the more I realize he meant exactly what he said. That's what he came to them with. That's what made them Christians. That's what he taught them. Jesus Christ and Him crucified. That's the gospel message. And that's what people need to be hearing. Most of us think that we have to be able to debate every point of doctrine and have a 3-month Bible study with somebody. We think we don't know enough. And today, maybe we're just afraid of rejection. Look at the climate we're in now, where if you're even let people know you're a Christian, you stand to be canceled by the culture, you know, and lose jobs or respect or admiration now. It's going to cost you something to be a Christian. And maybe we're just afraid of that. I saw that quote up. The only good Christian is a dead Christian. This was said by a school teacher in Washington State a couple of years ago. Wow. The times are changing, aren't they? And it's going to be harder to do this. Maybe we've been seduced by the philosophy of this world. We get so entangled with all the political ideology and the identity politics that climate change. That's something we can be passionate about. We can talk to strangers about that, or Black Lives Matter, or nuclear armament, or, you know, all these different things, terrorism. These things can consume us. And there's always something out there to do that. And I can tell you this, I've been to every countries and encountered every philosophy known to mankind, from evil dictators to countries whose completely suffered complete financial breakdowns, to socialist countries, to communist countries, to countries run by dictators, you name it. And in every one of those countries, I have found people living as Christians and living abundant lives as Christians. Don't let the world seduce us. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. Do you want the red pill or the blue pill? You know, in fact, that's even become so ingrained in our vocabulary now. They talk about red, you know, you're swallowing the red pill or the blue pill. And that's part of that whole philosophy. But we got to be courageous. Christ says, "Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will deny him before my Father." Secondly, in 1 Peter 3:15, he says, "But in your heart set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have." Always be prepared to give an answer. Some preparation is required. You know, I look at these guys that go out and do rock climbing. Now, that doesn't appeal to me at all. You know, I don't want to participate in anything as a sport or anything that if you make one mistake, you're splattered on the ground. No appeal there. But you don't just go out and start climbing up mountains. You have to prepare for that. You have to purpose it in your heart and know that that's what you're going to do, and you practice and you do your homework and you study materials and things like that, and you have to develop the will to win, just like we see in college football. You know, you don't just, everybody wants to win, But you have to work at it. You have to put in the work to do that. I was reminded of this a while back. You know, we have to develop an interest. You know, there was this, I was told these kids, they told me the 5 and 6 year olds couldn't memorize the books of the Old Testament because they were just too hard. You know, big, scary words and all this, and they were just too hard to learn. And I thought, well, you know, maybe that's too. Then I saw this thing called Pokemon. All these Japanese characters with Japanese names, and these 5 and 6 year olds, they knew every one of them, frontwards and backwards, by heart. Alphabetical or backwards alphabetically. I mean, you didn't know it because that's something they were interested in. And the adult version of Pokemon is like fantasy football or baseball. These guys, they can tell you players, statistics, what college they went to, what their averages are, you know, all they know, everything about them, but they couldn't give you 5 verses to tell somebody how to become a Christian because they're not interested. And so we have to develop an interest so we can be prepared to answer. And we need to practice, study together, role play, build confidence. These are things, these are why we assemble on like Wednesday nights. This is why we're here tonight. We're preparing to answer. We're looking at things that we can do to try to be better at that. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the hope that you have. Why would anybody ask you? If we don't live, if we live like the world, and we look like the world, and we listen to, laugh at dirty jokes, and we dress the way everybody else dresses, and we behave like everybody else, why would they ask us to give an answer? Why would they ask us about this? I'm told some preacher said there's actually 5 Gospels. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and you. People are looking at you, and they notice things. I was working in Brazil. I had a guy, a co-worker, that was an executive from the Netherlands, and he asked me one day, he said, Ken, he said, why is it you will never lie? I noticed that you won't lie about anything, which is real easy for executives to do, as those of you that have bosses may have noticed this before. And I said, well, Give me an hour of your time and let me explain that to you. He said, okay. So I just shared the gospel with him. When I finished, he said, you know, that makes a lot of sense, but I've never heard that before. I get that reaction a lot. I've never heard this before. You know why people say that? Because they've never heard it before. And so after that, I sent him a book called The Case for Christ, which is a good little book with a postmodern thing where a reporter was trying to disprove Christianity of his wife, and he ended up becoming a believer. And so he called me back and he said, Ken, he read the book. He said, if this is true, why isn't everybody a Christian? I said, well, that's a good question. Let's talk about that. So we started talking. And he was a scientist by education. And so pretty soon he's asking me questions I couldn't answer. I was just throwing books at him. For 2 years. And then one day he says, Ken, I want to be baptized. I want to become a Christian. And then he started going to universities and doing lectures on Christian evidences. And then he wrote a book on Christian evidences. And he asked me, he said, Ken, I want you to write a chapter in this book on the big picture of the Bible. He said, because that's what first got my attention. So now you can go to Amazon and buy this book now. It's called Prepared to Answer by Rob van de Vega, Dutch guy. And that's how it all started, when he just asked me why I would never lie. So don't ever underestimate your influence and what that means. And that's what this is saying in 1 Peter 3:15. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Well, what is the hope that we have? What is our hope based upon? Well, it's based upon the gospel, the hope of the gospel that you have heard. So that's the reason that people are asking us this. They want to know, why is it we believe what we believe? Why do we act the way we do? It's because of this hope that we have in the gospel. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God and salvation. Now, I have to understand, when we confront this today, how do we convert people? We have one method. Generally speaking, okay, generally speaking, among all the congregations, we have one method, and that's to try to get somebody into a Bible study. You know, would you like to have a Bible study? Would you like to have a Bible study? Would you like to have a Bible study? And what's the answer? No, no, no. Because I know if you get them in a Bible study, what are you going to do? Try to convince them of what you believe, and it's going to be a debate. And by the way, these Bible studies generally are three-month Bible studies. And we generally start talking about Bible authority and the work and worship of the church. We move through all this stuff, and if they hang with us for the whole time, we'll plant the gospel in their hearts. But I want you to notice something. You may have seen this chart before. This is a pretty famous chart that it talks about all these different cases of conversion in the New Testament. So we got Pentecost, the Samaritans, the eunuch, Cornelius, Lydia, the jailer. They all heard the gospel. They were from all different kinds of backgrounds. And I want you to really pay attention to that. Jews, non-Jews, proselytes, Gentiles, worshipers, pagans. They all heard what? The gospel. They all believed it. They confessed it. And look, they were all baptized. This is a chart we've used for years because our goal is to try to get people to be baptized. But I want you to notice one other thing that all these had in common. Every one of these took place in one session. Just like that meeting I had in Seattle. One session, they heard the gospel. And notice in that session, there was an agnostic, a teenager, and an evangelical couple. They all heard one message, and they all responded to it. And that's what we see in all these examples. I'm saying the gospel can be shared in one session. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't have a Bible study with somebody. I'm not against having Bible studies. But the gospel can be shared in one session. I'd say this. If you're close enough to somebody to have a Bible study, share the gospel with them. And then have a Bible study. And that's what I think we kind of see in the parable of the sower. You know, if you look at the sower, you know, what's he doing? He's out sowing the seed. And we see in this parable that he goes out and he throws some among the, it falls on the open ground, the birds of the air pick it up and eat it, and some falls on the rocks and it springs up and has no root and it dies, and some falls in the thorns and the weeds, and the weeds choke it out. And then some falls on the good ground, and it produces good results. Now think about that for a minute. I think maybe we should call this the parable of the stupid gardener. Because, you know, who goes out to garden, they don't do any soil preparation, and they're just throwing seed. Just throw it. It's falling everywhere. What's that telling us? What does the seed represent here? The Word of God. The gospel. You know, and that's what he's telling us as sowers. We need to be sowing the seed. That's the objective, is to sow the seed. Let God worry about the soil. And we just sow the seed. Let it fall where it may. But our problem is that we want results. We're not interested in making sowing our objective. Our objective is we want results. We want conversions. That's what we're after. You know, if this were a class, I would ask you, how many people does God require for us to convert before we can go to heaven? Well, he doesn't give us a requirement for that, does he? So thankfully, we don't have to worry about that. And we don't. But does he expect us that we're going to get to heaven if we never sow the seed? If we never tell anybody about this? This is what he's expecting from us, is to sow the seed. But no, as a result, we're trying to be soil inspectors. We try to decide who we're going to share this with. Oh, you know, I don't like this guy. You know, they've got this Michigan shirt on. I don't want to talk to them. This person's got piercings and stuff to their nose and tattoos. They don't want to hear this. What we do is we tend to look for soil that's already good soil. We decide our decision. We're going to decide whether the soil is good or not. And if we decide the soil is good, then we'll pop that. We'll give them the seed. But God's sort of saying, look, you don't worry about the soil. You worry about sowing. You sow. You let me worry about the soil. You let me worry about the hearts. Our job, our objective is to sow the seed. And furthermore, when we're also soil inspectors, when we do finally find that person, then we got to be soil preparers. So it'll take us about 3 months to get that soil prepared just right if they hang with us for 3 months. And if they do, then we'll pop that seed in and we'll have it. We're ready to go. The soil is ready. But that's not what we see in the parable of the sower. Our objective is to sow the seed. And this is one message I want you to really understand. Every time you sow the seed, you are successful. Regardless of whether someone is converted or not. Because when we sow the seed, we're doing exactly what God has asked us to do. The power to convert people is in that message. Not in our ability, not in our wisdom. It's in that message of the gospel. And we need to be sharing that with people. Well, there's several other methods we use that I'm not going to go into. You know, one is, well, you know, give our money to somebody else. So we donate money to people in other lands. I'm done my part now. I've given them my money. Or we take other approaches. One approach says, let others do the teaching. So you just go out and try to hook up somebody that's wanting to have a Bible study and then throw them at Heath. You know, that's his job. You know, so my job is just to channel people into Heath. You know, that's let somebody else do it. I call it the clergy lady approach. Another is to build a rapport. This is probably the closest I would come to accepting it. It's like you get somebody and you spend some time and you study through the book of Ecclesiastes because it's kind of doctrinally neutral. And when you get them there and you built up a good rapport with them, then you take them and study the book of Luke. And you can now share the gospel with them. And if I was going to do a 3-month Bible study, I would probably be more in favor of doing that one. But the gospel itself is where we need to focus our attention. Another is that we need to make ourselves attractive. Make our church buildings attractive. Make our classes attractive. So we get people to come, we invite them to church, and then we try to make their experience so great, the singing's great and all that, that that will appeal to them, and they'll come back. And these methods were gleaned from the churches that had become mega churches. And these were the techniques that they used. And they now find that's backfiring on them. And so we don't want to do that. That's not, you know, I call that the painting the pig approach. We want to make ourselves attractive. So, you know, you put pearls around a pig and you paint their lips and all that. They're still a pig. you know, and we can try to make ourselves attractive, but the best we are at any of that is we're pigs. The only thing that we need to attract people with is the gospel. And so our buildings, our singing, our classes, our study materials, our friendliness, our worship service, our doctrinal correctness, our marketing, all these different things are what we use to try to attract people with. And we need to take the gospel. And here's a great clip from Gary Henry, which I'm not going to play for you tonight. But this is really the point of all this, is that what we attract people with is what they're converted to. Now think about that. So if you're trying to attract them with fun, or if you're trying to attract them with singing, or, you know, all these other things, that's what they're converted to. And that's not what where the appeal of the message should bring us. The gospel is the power of God for salvation. That's what we need to use to try to attract people with. It's not about trying to get numbers. Thriving churches have the Great Commission as the centerpiece of their vision, while dying churches have forgotten the clear command of God. Dying churches are churches that aren't sharing the gospel, because that's the only place the power is. And that's all I can say. It's just that simple. We, you know, who has the gospel? We have the gospel. Where are people going to hear it? If they don't hear it from us, where are they going to hear it? That's what we have. And if this church isn't sharing the gospel, this church is a dying church. Ultimately, it's not a growing church, at least on that basis. If you're looking for a magic bullet, the magic bullet is the gospel. But you've got to be willing to share the gospel. You've got to be willing to share it on stony ground and rocky ground and thorny ground. You've got to be able to be willing to share it with everybody, anytime, anywhere, any place. The power is in the message. It's not in our ability, our skill. It's not in our cleverness. It's not in our methods or techniques. It's not in our attractiveness. The power to accomplish what God wants accomplished is in the gospel, His message. And that's why we see in Galatians 1, when the Christians were changing the gospel, they were in big trouble. Big trouble. We'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow as well. So, we want results. So there's a lot of things that we do, and I'm not going to go into that now. We see a lot of things that churches are doing to try to get results, like I call it gospel helper. You know, we create the social gospel. You know, we try to have a lot of fun and do things to attract kids. One preacher, the gospel preacher, said, you get people to come and you make those children classes so good. Give them free pony rides. Give them iPads. So those kids will want to come back and they'll get their parents back. I mean, can you imagine? What kind of thinking is this? What are we thinking? I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God. That's what we need to be working on. We don't need to be working on some kind of magic techniques. You know, we see churches changing the hermeneutic now. Oh, we've got to forget about teaching baptism or women's roles or instrumental music. We got to change all that, because we're not going to be able to get people if we don't. They're missing the whole point. We need a faith-based approach. Faith in the gospel, not faith in methods or techniques. So he says, in your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that is in you. But do this with gentleness and reverence. Now think about that. Gentleness to who? Gentleness to the person we're talking to. And reverence to whom? Reverence to God. This is His message. This is His message of salvation. Gentleness and reverence. Since I've been sharing the gospel with people, I can't remember. I cannot remember the last time I got into an argument with anybody. It's almost self-evident. Even atheists, if they don't respond right on the spot, and they normally don't, but they see there's something to this. This isn't what I've been led to believe that the Bible is all about. This isn't what I understood. There's actually a kernel of truth to this. Everybody can see that. And a lot of people that I've shared the gospel with, they don't respond right then. I don't put pressure on them. But a lot of times they'll call me back 2 days later, 3 days later, a week later. I had one guy call me 2 years later. Ken, I need to be baptized. The gospel will do its work if people hear it. It'll do the work God intends it to do. So there's three things I'll say to become an effective sower. Is that one, we need passion. We need a good attitude, gentleness and reverence, and we need to know the gospel. I call this the three-legged stool of evangelism. That you need all three of these things. What if you're missing passion? What if you don't have passion? Well, it doesn't matter what your attitude is. It doesn't matter what you know about the gospel. If you're lacking passion, you're not going to share it with anybody. You're not going to talk to anybody about it. What if you're missing attitude? What if you don't have a good attitude? And you've got passion and you know the gospel. Well, I put myself in this category. I had passion for a long time, but I had a lousy attitude. I walked around my Bible just looking for somebody to disagree with me on doctrine so I could beat them up. I was what I called a gospel hammer. That's the old expression that says, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And that's the way I approach it. And that's what you get when you don't have gentleness and reverence and love for the lost. Well, what if you got passion and you've got attitude, you got a good attitude, but you don't know the gospel? What's going to happen then is you're either going to burn out, or you're going to teach a different gospel, or you're going to focus on growth tactics or some other methods or techniques. But we need all three of these. I did a lot of business consulting in my career. And I'd go into companies and troubleshoot problems that they had. And I did something, one of the tools I used was a thing I got out of the Harvard Business Review years ago called a maturity assessment. And you'd look at a function and you'd define five stages of maturity for that function. And then you'd try to determine, well, where do they land on this? Oh, they're at a one, they're at a two. There to three, whatever. And then you'd look at a number of functions, and when you finished, you could look at that and say, now we can put together a plan on how to move you towards this optimum place over here. And I was sitting there one day and I thought, what would a maturity assessment look like for the gospel? Now, this is not inspired, you know, but I just sit there and I just came up with this on the spot. And I'm going to share it with you for fun. I call it five stages of evangelistic maturity. So the first stage I call avoidance. And that is, in the avoidance stage, we never share the gospel with anybody, ever. And we let others do it. If the subject comes up with someone, you retreat. You run away. And I'm unprepared and unwilling to share the gospel. And by the way, that's what I give my money for. You know, the preacher or others should do it. I give money for that. That's stage one. Stage two is what I call reluctance. And occasionally, I might discuss religion with somebody. But they have to bring it up. And it's usually only when I'm backed into a corner or attacked or something like that. I'm not very prepared. And by the way, that's what we hired our preacher for. That's really what his job is, to do this. I'm not supposed to be having to do this. That's level two. Now, don't come up to me afterwards and tell me what your level is. This is for you. This is for self-introspection. You know, you can share this with anybody you want to, but you know, I don't care. You know, I want you to just think about this. Third level, I call equipped. I'll occasionally share the gospel with someone, but I need a push from someone else. I have spent some time in preparation. I've done some preparation. But I'd really rather somebody else do it and just let me listen in or assist. I'm still quite afraid of rejection. And really, that's what our church should do. You know, the church should have a program for this, you know, so that I don't have to do this by myself. The fourth stage I call confident. I'm ready, willing, and able to share the gospel with anyone. I can do it. And I'll go for it when the opportunity presents itself. I've spent some significant time in preparation. I'm comfortable with the message, but somewhat lacking in zeal. And I'm really motivated by guilt. I feel like if I don't do this, I'm doing wrong. You know, so I'll do it because I don't want to feel guilty. You know, so I'll do it for that. But then we hit level 5, and I call this committed. Now I actively pursue sharing the gospel with anyone, anytime, anywhere. I'm passionate and consumed with a mission to sow the seed. I actively seek opportunities to share the gospel. I encourage and try to help others. And this last point is most important. I am motivated by joy. Now think about that. Think about being motivated by joy to tell others about Jesus Christ and Him crucified, to share that story with people. Those are 5 levels I suggest of maturity in evangelism. All of us fall somewhere in here, maybe not clearly in one, maybe 1 or 2, you know, maybe we blend over. But let me give you an example. I know a guy, I put him in category 5. Now, let's suppose you go to the grocery store and you load up your cart with groceries and you're getting ready to check out and you're going up to the checkout counters. What are you looking for? Now, just think for a minute. What are you looking for? I know what you're thinking. The shortest line, right? The shortest checkout line. This guy was such a fool for the gospel. He was such an idiot. He would look for the longest line. He wanted the longest checkout line because he wanted to try to strike up a conversation with the person that was in front of him so he could maybe try to get a conversation about the gospel going. And do you see that? That sounds crazy, doesn't it? But we should all be so crazy. That's what it's all about. So, I'll leave you with these thoughts. You can do it. Every Christian should be able to share the gospel with anyone. This is one of my favorite photographs. This is when I was fat, by the way. She told me tonight, what was your name? Carol. Carol. She said, I thought you were fat. I lost some weight. So this is me being fat in Tanzania. And I had a lot of times when I go places, the first thing I do is buy some souvenirs because a lot of these countries, you're not allowed to preach the gospel. It's illegal. And so I'll put those souvenirs in my hotel room so if the police come looking or the secret police or whatever to investigate you, they'll see those souvenirs. They go, oh, he's a tourist. You know. So we went to this market the first day. We were in Addis Ababa. No, that's not in Addis. Dar es Salaam. And it was a market where yachts and boats come in off the water to resupply. So they had a market there selling souvenirs and all kinds of stuff. And I was standing there talking to one of the guys. He said, what are you doing over here? And I said, I'm here to do some lectures. He said, oh, what kind of lectures? I said, Bible lectures. He said, oh, I'd love to hear them. I said, have you got 30, 40 minutes? He said, yeah. So we went over. I said, let's do it. So he got 3 of his friends. We went over under a tree. And I shared the gospel with him. And when I finished, he and his three friends wanted to be baptized. So they took him down the ocean, and we baptized him. Well, they come back into the market, and it's almost like a scene from the New Testament. They're excited. They're rejoicing. And they're going around telling their friends about it. And I got people coming up to me saying, hey, I'd like to hear about this. I did 7 presentations of the gospel that day and baptized 28 people. And this lady came up. She said, I want to hear about this gospel. I said, okay. And this is me with her and her three friends under a tree. I've got a translator there. She's in blue. I had been praying. I had never shared the gospel with a Muslim. And I was looking forward. I was staying in a Muslim hotel. And I was looking forward to sharing it with a Muslim. And so after I shared the gospel with these ladies, they wanted to be baptized. They were baptized. She came up and she said, I'd like to change my Muslim name to a Christian name. First Muslim I ever shared the gospel with obeyed the gospel. I never said anything about the Quran or Muhammad or all the stuff we think they need to hear. That's our thinking. You know, we think we know what people need to hear. You know, if I'm going to talk to an agnostic, they need to hear about science and or, you know, stuff like that or evidences. And if you're going to talk to evangelicals, they need to hear about Bible authority and all this kind of stuff. And if you're going to talk to a teenager, I don't know what you'd say to them. But the gospel, that's where the power is. And every Muslim I shared the gospel with on that trip obeyed the gospel. And I never once mentioned Muhammad or the Quran or Islam. The power is in the gospel, and you can do it. And it's, again, I know I'm giving you conversion stories because I want you to understand the power, and I can give you more of those maybe tomorrow. But first, you have to get it. Get the passion. Start. Get the love of Christ in your heart and what he's done for you and why he's worth doing it and why it's something we need to tell people about. Generate some passion and zeal. Learn the gospel. Know the gospel. And that's what we'll study in the morning. Then share it with others. Have a love for the lost. You know, love people enough to try to find a way to share it with them. I was just telling them about a lady I was on the plane with a couple of weeks ago. I was returning from Zambia. She was from South Africa, sitting beside me, and I shared the gospel with her. And she wanted to be baptized. And that's kind of hard when you're at 30,000 feet, you know? So we had to make some special accommodations for that. But have a love for the lost. Have enough love for people and enough love for Jesus to tell them about the gospel and set the right example. Live the kind of life that you're trying to attract people with so that let them see your service, your joy and passion for what God has done for you. And you can do it. You can do it. I've been right where you are. I've been right where other churches were. I didn't always have passion for the gospel, but I didn't really know the gospel. I knew doctrine up the wazoo, but I wasn't sharing the gospel with people. And I want you to think, you can do this. You can do this. It's not hard. It's empowering. And it's, by the way, it's the message that God asks us to go and tell people, to tell them about his son and what his son has done for us, that Christ came to be the Lamb of God, to die the death that we deserve, that we can be united with him in baptism and have our sins removed. And that's what the gospel is all about. And maybe you're here tonight and you have need of the gospel. And if that's the case, why don't you come now while we stand and while we sing?